All right. Good morning. This podcast is brought to you by Home Theater Solutions. HTS is your local technology expert. Serving Delaware for 16 years, HTS specializes in TV installations, home automations, Sonos audio systems, security cameras, and Wi-Fi networks. For all of your home or business tech needs, give them a call, 1-800-690-2029, or visit htsav.net. All right. Good morning. Welcome back. This is the Rehoboth Social Podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. Good morning. It is January 17th, 2022, almost halfway through the first month of the new year. Good morning.
Good morning.
So today, I have a great guest, Lauren Haggerty from, this is a good one. Well, what happened to the, Brain Love Neurotherapy. Neurotherapy. I almost said neurology. Neurotherapy. Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, just the name alone, I'm doing well. Thank you. Just the name alone made me want to have you on the podcast because I'm a big fan of brains and I'm a big fan of love.
Great.
So I wanted to publicly apologize to you. We were supposed to do this last week and I had a tooth infection and it all kind of came to a head that day and there was nothing that I could do other than try to get my tooth fixed. So when you call me, you're like, I'm like, shit, I think I had a podcast. And I was just sitting in the dentist chair. So I apologize. Sorry for the delay, but here we are this week and hopefully you can accept my apology.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So, you know, we were talking a little bit before the podcast started and I was like, oh, this is all great stuff. But what I wanted to at least mention is how bad my brain went with that tooth infection. I had gotten a filling done in October. The doctor said it was iffy. And just from October till last week, it just slowly became a situation. And at one point, I had a little bit of a breakdown right before Christmas. I was overworked. I was crazy. And I think it had something to do with that freaking tooth infection because I was just out of my mind.
So at Brain Love, no matter whether you're 5 or 90, when you come in the door, you go through the same process. We take a brain map.
Yeah.
And from that, we compare your brain to hundreds of other brains your age. Mm. And we get that bell curve. Mm. And we can see on the mean where you're regulated and out on the tails where you're dysregulated. And all we do at Brain Love is we go after the biggest dysregulations. And if you had come in before you had your tooth fixed, I probably would have sent you to the dentist because I can see if there's an infection towards the front of the brain, like in the sinuses or in a tooth.
So could that have been, you know, and we're not going to make this a podcast about my tooth, but I had a freaking headache for like 3 weeks. I thought I had gotten COVID because somebody had said at one point, oh, I had COVID, but only symptoms I had was a headache. So I'm like, okay, I must have COVID. I think it's all been basically from that tooth.
Well, neuroinflammation can cross the blood-brain barrier. And indeed, when people come into my office in March and April, they're all lit up like Christmas trees from the pollen.
Oh.
So we see that. And if I see it and it's exactly the same on both the left and right side of the brain, then I'm like, okay, this is an allergen. This is a cytokine reaction. If I see it on just one side of the brain and it's up in the front of the head, I'm going to rule out sinus and rule out tooth infection. But we often do see neuroinflammation on just one side of the head in old concussion and old brain injury. And the brain doesn't like being left and right difference like that. The brain loves to be balanced, particularly the thalamus loves to get equal information from both sides of your brain. Wow. So when we help regulate the side that's really out of whack, things just start to run better.
So why would a person feel like they need to reach out to you? Because listen, in the world that we're in now, I mean, I feel like every day I have brain cancer or a tumor or something's wrong with me. And I'm like, oh my God, something's wrong. It's just the end.
So well, as humanity is winding down now,
feels like that.
There's a million reasons to come into Brain Love. And, you know, from what I do, I think everybody needs at least 10 sessions just to learn about how your brain is working and how to take care of your brain. So we're all like snowflakes. We all have different dysregulations. And it's really very helpful to come in, take a look under the hood, and see what's going on. We often compare the brain to a 5-speed transmission. So there's delta, theta, alpha, beta, and gamma, or high beta.
Is there going to be a test? Because no. If there is, I need to write some
It's
stuff
a five-speed transmission. First gear, second gear, third gear, fourth gear, fifth gear.
Okay.
So first gear is your deep sleep wave, right? The primary oscillator there, I know I talk above things, but the primary oscillator there is the basal ganglia. So we're looking at how the basal ganglia is working and how your brain is burning dopamine when we're looking how much first gear you have and how regulated you are in first gear. That's your deep sleep wave. It's very helpful to regulate that because you sleep better. Mm. Second gear is theta. It's between asleep and awake. So that state is like, say you roll over and you hear the coffee pot go off and then you're drifting.
Yes.
That's second gear. Right. And there's actually people that have too much second gear and they're running around not fully conscious and still operating as human beings.
That sometimes seems like it happens to me.
Yeah. Then third gear is sitting on the couch taking in the world. So you're not burning a lot of fuel in your brain. You're not working really hard. Maybe you're watching a movie. Some of us don't have enough third gear and it's very hard for us to sit down on a couch and relax. Right. So it's very good to have that regulated.
Right.
And we can also see how your thalamus is operating there because thalamus is the primary oscillator in third gear. Fourth gear, you're now burning fuel. Some of us don't burn fuel well, or some of us are stuck up in fourth gear and there's anxiety there. You're actually exothermic. You're giving off heat. Your brain is giving off heat. You're burning fuel.
Mm.
And that can be problematic because as we age and as we injure, it's harder to burn fuel, even if there's fuel there. Brain can only burn glucose, lactic acid, and ketones. So we talk a lot about MCT oil at my office. It's the number one thing that we talk about when we see a brain that isn't getting enough fuel because your brain is its own best regulator. So if we see that, we talk about, you know, please go and research how to alternatively fuel your brain and please increase your nutrition. And I can't say enough about exercise. You just can't get away from diet and exercise.
Right.
And then fifth gear is when whole networks are going very fast across the neocortex. It's a very fast wave. And it takes a lot of fuel to run fifth gear as well. Like if you're working for Verizon and you got four screens going, you're going to get a headache because you're just burning fuel all day.
Right.
Employers like it when we burn fuel.
I don't think people realize that the brain burns calories.
Yeah.
I don't think people realize that eating well helps your brain. I think we always just think of the, you know, I love the idea. I always feel like it's almost like the brain is an alien, right, that came to this planet and said, how can we get around this planet and created this kind of body,
right?
Because basically I feel like my body is just this brain car that allows my brain to adventure the planet, right? It's kind of like, you know, how else would you get the brain around? It obviously doesn't have feet, so it has this kind of feel like we're just created to let the brain get around.
And all that evolution, and there's still things we can't do.
Right. Well, and, you know, it's a, you know, the word halt, you know, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. People use that a lot because, you know, whenever you start to feel like you're having a brain mental breakdown, sometimes you can check off a few things. Have you eaten?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you lonely? Mm-hmm. Are you tired? You know, there's these things that, you know, if they're out of whack, the brain doesn't run well. Like my tooth.
Mm-hmm.
That tooth, I could not, you know, I couldn't think. I was out of it.
Another way to look at what Brain Love does is we do the hardware. We help regulate the hardware. And oftentimes people do have mental health issues. And it's really good to do brain training alongside therapy so they can work on the software. And you can just get a bigger bang for your buck out of the whole thing if you do both simultaneously. Same thing if you have a physical injury and you do physical therapy and brain training at the same time. We're not as good with some things as others. There's new stuff coming down the pike all the time. So the mission of Brain Love is to have state-of-the-art of the equipment and training.
So you can really train. I mean, there's things that you can do to improve your brain.
Oh, sure.
Wow.
Oh, sure. And some people get more out of the whole thing than others do. And there's a lot of different reasons for that. Everybody has a different constitution and condition when they come in the door. And some people need more brain training than others. A younger brain is going to get a bigger bang than an older brain.
Hmm.
Like, it's going to take me longer with an older brain. Or if you have like really big stuff going on, like say Parkinson's, it's going to take longer. I liken it to turning a container ship in the ocean. It takes a minute to turn, you know? So, yeah. And we work with young people, we work with older people, we work with everybody.
Well, I think I wouldn't be alone if I was to say that there's days I feel like, you know, I can't, my memory's bad all of a sudden. I struggle with thought. And then some days I get up and I can remember everything. And I don't struggle. You know, I do this podcast and some days I'm like, oh, well, I need that word. What's the word? And I can't find it.
Mm-hmm.
And some days it just flies right out. It's like, it's crazy. And then, of course, I think I'm all of a sudden getting some sort of, you know, the long, short goodbye or whatever it's called, Alzheimer's or dementia. And then the next day I'm like, you know, with it. And it's just crazy.
Well, we all fear dementia. We've all been touched by it. And I think from a neurofeedback perspective, we break dementia down into three parts. So you have neuroinflammation. So, you know, if you're younger and you learn how to take care of your brain, finding ways to cut neuroinflammation is very important. We look at neurotoxicity because we live in a dirty environment all the way from our fetal environment forward. We can be impacted by that. And our brain is developing in the presence of that. We do hair sample analysis at my office to look for heavy metals. When we suspect it, there's markers in the maps that make me suspect that. So we want to rule that out. And we want to talk to people about ways that they can maybe get rid of like aluminum, mercury, things like that, that are impacting how your brain is functioning. And then the last one is metabolic. Are you getting enough fuel? And what can you do to change that if you do need more fuel? And most people who come in my office that have some form of dementia have all three of those things going on, but one of them is the bigger one than the other two. So we attack it from all sides.
My mom, we lost my mom. I guess it'll be 2 years, I guess, this October. And she was doing really well. And then all of a sudden she got something called giant cell arteritis, which attacked all of the vascular system of her, really the fine vascular system of her eyes. And she went blind in a week.
Wow.
And then it started to attack her brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go visit her. She was here at BB for this. And unfortunately it all happened right when COVID started. So it was like
double whammy.
Yeah, it was awful. But you know, the great thing was I got to go hang out with her and I would read to her and she would kind of slip into this. She's like, look at all the people. I'm like, what are you talking about, Mom? She's like, there's people here. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, okay. And she's like, there's animals walking under the bed. And I was like, wow. And I'm like, well, that's pretty cool, you know. But it makes you wonder, what is it that our brain does? I mean, you know, I don't know anything about the brain. I'm pretty much an idiot when it comes to that kind of stuff. But I feel like, and, you know, we hear about dimensions and we hear, you know, all these crazy kind of things. But then I start to wonder, does the brain keep us in a certain place? Is it, you know, when it starts to fail, does it start to allow, you know, I had a friend whose father had dementia and she says, oh, those people are dementites. They are people that people with dementia see. And the whole thing is just crazy. But she was like, there are people in here.
Yeah, so it was beyond a hallucination into a delusion. She believed that they were there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I guess she believed them. She, for a person that was blind, she could see. It was.
Yeah, the eyes are funny. They play
tricks. Well, you hear, I mean, what do we use? Just what, 10% of our brain or 20% of our brain? I don't know what the number is, but it sounds like we haven't quite figured out the real capability of the brain.
Yeah, well, think about it this way.
I don't know.
Think about, she has an occipital lobe in the back of her head that processes visual information, and all of a sudden, she's not getting visual information. What are all those neurons going to do? They start playing, right? Yeah. And it's almost like she's got a waking dream going on.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And in schizophrenia, the auditory cortex kind of gets hijacked, and people start hearing voices. And one of the things that we see with that is that the auditory cortex isn't connected to the rest of the brain. So think about mainland United States and Hawaii. All of a sudden, your auditory cortex is so far away from the rest of your brain and not connected. What is that going to do? It's going to start playing. You're going to start hearing things that aren't there.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not crazy, but it's wild, right?
Yeah.
It's just a thought. How do you... You know, I have a buddy that does another podcast, and he's very, you know, he's all about electrical, you know, synapses and different things. And I'm really about, like, humility and relationships with, like, higher power. And how do those work? Because we know we have religion, and then I can get caught up in something, and the brain is just kind of going out of control. And if I can stop and, like, say... some humble kind of moment, like a prayer or just something, I'm not religious. I'm just into, like, you know, self and humility. And when self gets rampant, I can get a little out of control and I start, you know, I can turn it over or say a prayer and find relief through that. How does that work? I mean, how do we explain that?
Well,
my buddy would be like, oh, it's just something else firing and wires. And I'm like,
we need mind love neurotherapy for that. No.
Mind
so,
love.
Brain love neurotherapy. So I would say that being in the moment and being present is in your frontal lobes, right?
Okay.
And most of us are back in the monkey mind in our parietal lobe, listening to that voice in our head. So we should be 20% back there and 80% up here. And when you start to feel chaotic and you stop yourself and you take in what's around you and you say a prayer of gratitude and you recenter, you're coming back to your frontal lobes and you're being in the moment. Because when we're living in the future, we're anxious, and when we're living in the past, we're depressed.
Yes.
So you got to be here now.
So you are where your feet are.
Yeah.
I love that. I mean, I understand the phrase and I understand the idea, but someone said that the other day. I was like, hey, I like that. You are where your feet are.
Yeah.
So when you're not, you're in the back of your brain.
Yes, you're in your parietal lobe.
And that's where, you know, we fantasize and daydream, and then the front of our brain
and
is
worry
where we're in
and
the moment.
Ruminate and
so a lot of us, we've been in the back of our brain for a bit here in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
We're stressed out.
Yes.
So do you teach? Is there like ways of teaching, educating people about that?
Well, one of the things that we look at is your peak alpha. We're all obsessed with our peak alpha. So it's like your idle speed. And there's a lot of different things. There's genetic factors. There's all kinds of things that go into how fast you're running in your background rhythm. And as you grow up, your background rhythm goes up. And as you age, it goes down. That's why we're all obsessed. We're like, okay, I'm still a 10 and a half. I'm good. So that can impact how you experience the world as far as your shutter speed, how fast you take in information, which is nice, but it's a double-edged sword because the faster you are at taking in information and the faster your background speed, the more likely you are to be anxious and sort of chihuahua-like.
Yeah. Well, and there's, I mean, I know for me, I start to recognize things with how I think, and then I start to understand that there are things that I can do to help me either stay out of negative thinking or poor thinking, and there's things that I can do to stay in the moment. What is it that we're trying to do? Are we educating people? Are we learning about how to use our brain, or are we just identifying situations in the brain?
So, for instance, some people are very much more organized when they close their eyes. And so I'll say to them, I can see in your brain maps that if you're feeling chaotic and you close your eyes and do deep breathing for just a minute several times a day, you're going to recenter. Whereas others of us close our eyes and we get hypervigilant because we can't see what's going on around us. So it is not centering to close our eyes and take deep breaths. Indeed, I've seen heart rates go up to the 140s in a kid who closed his eyes because he was that hypervigilant. So we had to work to teach him that it was okay not to use his vision and that he was safe.
Wow. That is interesting. You know, when I lay in bed at night and close my eyes, I always say, what do you see? What do people see? Some people, you know, I think we just kind of get used to this kind of gray darkness. And I find that is a lot of self. It's kind of interesting. I don't know what to talk about, so I'm just going to share some of the stuff that goes on in my brain. But I struggle with this self and humility. And if I close my eyes at night and just shut them and just look, because I spend a lot of time thinking about this stuff, trying to go to sleep. And if I say a prayer, sometimes this gray self kind of self-centered fear area just starts to kind of melt away, and I can really go into like blue skies and sunshine. I mean, if I can get myself straight in the brain when I'm going to bed, I can see the sun so bright where I have to almost turn away and I'm trying to go to sleep.
Well, that sounds like an interesting way to put yourself to sleep.
Okay. Well, so what else? Tell me what else you guys do. So you go onto your website and you take this test, and what do you learn from this test?
So you actually have to come into the clinic to get a brain map. Mm-hmm. So I take you through Brain Map 101. I show you what a surface brain map looks like. There's hundreds of pages that I get of data, but I show you what the summary page looks like. I take you through Brain Map 101 with just a basic brain. And then you sit in a different chair. We put a goopy cap on your head.
Right.
And then we take 10 minutes eyes open, 10 minutes eyes closed data. And that's it for the first session. You have to go away and shampoo your hair.
Okay.
And then the next time you come back, we put your brain up on the big TV. And we talk all through what we're seeing on the surface, the part that's the neocortex, the bark of the brain, and also the deeper structures that we share with the mammals. And we say, these are all the biggest dysregulations that we see, and this is what we want to do to treat that. And I'm a little different at Brain Love in the sense that I don't do traditional neurofeedback, that's when you put the goopy cap on every single time and you're interacting with a TV screen. And every time your brain is in regulation, you get a reward. Like in my office, it's a green dot and a bell. It's very basic. And then when you're not in regulation, when you're out in your dysregulations, you don't get the reward. And you just sit back, not consciously doing it, and your brain starts pinging with the system. Mm. And I'm back there making it a little bit harder and a little bit harder and keeping you in the training zone. That's traditional neurotherapy. That's neurofeedback. It's operant conditioning is what it is. What we do at my office is more neurostimulation because we find it's faster to get someone in and out and feeling better with their brain. So I do pulsed electromagnetic frequency,
okay,
which is we pulse it so we don't heat up the cell. We put this nice dry Velcro cap on for the treatments, and we stick boxes. For instance, my son was stuck in second gear all the way across his frontal lobes, where the executive reasoning lives, where the decision-making lives, where the focus lives. And I put the boxes across the front of his head, and I ran fourth gear, which is, you know, being able to think much faster. And while he's sitting there, it's subsensory. You can hear it sometimes if it's over by your ear, but we're just sitting there talking. His brain is mimicking it because the boxes are giving off exactly what the brain gives off. So the brain goes, oh, I know what this is, and it mimics. So while he's sitting there, he's in fourth gear. When he leaves my office, he goes right back to second gear. But over the 10 sessions, the brain wants to regulate. It picks up the information. So your brain is in charge. I'm not in charge. Mm. And then we do a second map, and we compare apples to apples. How far do we get? He's reporting improvements in focus and attention. And we can see that we sped them up in the brain maps.
So do you teach people how to spend more time in fourth gear and not in second gear? I mean, is there an actually education that you teach people that they can practice?
Well, we teach you that you're stuck in second gear, and we teach you ways to get up to fourth gear.
I mean, does someone come in and say, oh, my God, I feel like I'm stuck in second gear. Can you please help me? I mean, what that test does to try to get an idea?
Yeah, so the brain map, the EEG brain map, is looking at the speed and connection in your brain. That's what I work on, speed and connection. And as I'm talking to people, I take a pretty tight subjective history. I start to know before I even look at the map what's going on with your brain after
what gear
this
am I in?
6 years of doing that.
Well,
what
gear
it's,
am I in right
it's
now?
Morning, so I don't, you know.
What are you detecting here? Do I have a condition?
If you filled out all of my forms, I would probably know. But
well, I can do that. I mean, yeah. I don't mind trying.
Yeah.
But, you know, well, I think we all sit around and worry about our brain. So I'm just wondering, how does someone get in touch with you when they have concerns? They're, you know, when someone's like, oh, geez, I don't know. Should I reach out?
Yeah, you go to my website.
Okay.
www.brainloveneurotherapy.com. I have two office locations, one in Rehoboth and one in Dover, because so many people were driving down the state to see me. Oh. I had to make it easier. I do have one assistant at this time. I should have another one soon. Just trying to be able to have someone walking in the door and get them started in a timely fashion. So I do have state-of-the-art equipment. I have some new equipment coming in the next 30 to 45 days. There's something called pink noise. It's very exciting. Pink noise. It's a random
wow.
noise. So it's a sound wave. And it's what your brain is giving off when you're awake. So if you have someone whose background rhythm is too slow, we do pink noise. If someone's background rhythm is too fast, we do brown noise. And it's almost like an adaptogen. It's almost like the brain is filling in its own potholes, if you will. I had it on my head at a conference, and it felt amazing. So I can't wait to bring it to Delaware.
Wow. That sounds fantastic. So how many people do you see, like, in a week? Is this, like, you know, is it a...
Well, I'm careful about that. The capacity for the office for one person would be 25 in a week, five a day.
Okay.
And I feel like the wheels come off the bus after that.
Yeah.
And you're not present for your client. You're out of gear after that. So we try and hold the line on that. And I, you know, if I do get busier than that, then I'll just have someone start in the morning and then they'll take off and someone else will be there in the afternoon.
Well, I do think that is interesting. I know that for me in the hair business, you know, I start off my day, I'm big into running. You know, I'm to me, that is almost my mental medication, you know, to suffer a little. You know, I work a lot of stuff out in my head. And I always say, if you want to learn about yourself, go for a run, because between the running and the brain, there's a lot of interesting stuff. And over the miles, as, you know, each mile goes by, my attitude kind of changes in my brain. So
well, the blood is rushing around your brain, bringing in more nutrition, bringing in more oxygen, and getting rid of toxins. So you're basically rinsing out your brain every time you go for a run, and it's super healthy for your brain.
Oh, if I don't run, I get kind of caught up in it. I don't know what gear that I fall into, but it gets a little messy. And then I come to work and I'm dealing with clients and conversation and sometimes repeating conversation. And then I get confused on who I told what to. And it can be just by the end of the day, I don't physically do anything really. I'm not wheelbarrowing, right? But by the end of the day, I'm pretty frazzled.
Yeah. Well, it's important to know your limits. And it's important to know, like, for me, I don't start my day until 10 o'clock because I am not a morning person.
Right.
My best ability to function as a fourth gear person is between, like, 10 and 6 o'clock.
Is that where we want to be, fourth gear?
Yeah. Well, at work, you need to be in fourth gear or you're not going to remember who you told what. And you're not going to be able to keep your schedule straight and all the things that you need to do at work. You need to be up in fourth gear. And it sounds to me also like you're probably burning some lactic acid from running if you like to run that much. And you probably have a fuel issue. And if you come in and do the brain map and let me look under the hood, I can say, okay, this is everything that I see that's going on. These are some supplements you might need to research. This is what you might need to think about. And then let's do some brain brightening. Mm-hmm. And let's get some speed and connection going where we see dysregulation. Let's get regulation. And people report all kinds of things. People say, I'm sleeping better. Although a really big insomnia case can take much longer than 10 sessions. But in general, people say, I'm sleeping better. People say, I don't procrastinate as much. There's an office that I meant to clean out 3 years ago, and I cleaned it out after doing 10 sessions with you. Or my favorite, because I got it from a 75-year-old and an 11-year-old in different words. The 75-year-old said, I can be in an argument with my partner and take a step back, and instead of knee-jerk reacting, I can come back in and explain my position in a loving way.
Oh.
And the 11-year-old said, when I get in trouble with mom and dad, I can sit and listen to their concerns instead of just yelling.
Well, I have kids, and believe me, it tests my brain. And I have a 16-year-old right now that's, you know, tested me. And it's not really, he's a great kid. I think what's testing me is how the relationship is changing and how I need to change with it. And sometimes, you know, change is difficult. And especially when you always feel like, or I always feel like, you know, my approach is the right approach and it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, you know, what is going on? So I'm having to be a little more. I told my wife, I go, this is the breakaway, right? You know, if our kids did everything we asked and were perfect, we'd never let them go. They would stay with us forever. You know, at some point, we're like, you need to go. It's time, you know? And I feel like we're kind of beginning that process. And I think the last 2 years have been very stressful. And I think we're seeing a lot of that in how people are behaving now. I was wondering, I go, maybe we're just all assholes and we've done a real good job at hiding that and we've just given up on that now and we've become less friendly.
Well, certainly COVID hasn't done anybody any favors, but
no.
I mean, we were already doing studies in the 90s about how empathy was dropping in rising freshmen because of screen time. Mm. And if it was 40% down in the 90s, my goodness, where is it today? So I don't know how, as a society, we deal with some of the backlash of all the screen time that has overtaken the world, because we need to relate to each other as human beings more. And you can almost look at it like a dysregulated brain, right?
Yeah.
That we need to work on speed and connection in society, too. And I think spending time together is how we do that. And that is what we haven't been able to do during COVID. So it's like a double whammy.
Or we've been spending a lot of time together.
Yeah, but with the same group of people, and we need more than that, you know? Yeah. Somebody also did a study back in the 60s where they put a water bottle in a rat cage and a water bottle laced with drugs in a rat cage, and the rat became a junkie. They redid the study where they made a really fun cage with other rats to play with and a wheel to run on and all kinds of things to do. And they put the water bottle and the drug-laden water bottle, and they did not become junkies. So you really have to make your cage really colorful. So you think
junkies are because they're just bored? Yes. Well, maybe it could be.
You gotta engage more.
Well, I know for me at least, I know doing through this COVID and all this stuff, I'm having to really pay attention, and just speaking for myself, just, you know, my reactions, restraint from pen and tongue sometimes, you know, just knowing when, even though I feel like I'm in the right, my brain says green, like go, but, you know, my mouth says, you know, maybe not as important at this moment to have an opinion and just kind of keep my mouth shut and just kind of keep my head down. And sometimes we've kind of created this environment now where it's almost easier to just not talk to anybody, right? And I love to talk. I love to be social, and it's just tough. And, you know, screen time is an interesting one, especially with kids, because, you know, we've created this environment now where we're so afraid to let our kids out. You know, like my daughter's not allowed to play in the front yard by herself, because she's going to get kidnapped. And I'm like, well, nobody's kidnapped anybody here. But this is what's happening, right? And and you're like, okay, well, I can't say that it's for sure not going to happen. So I guess, you know, Teresa goes to the backyard. And when we were kids, we played wherever and did whatever. And so it's just all kind of falling into place to make it hard to take electronic devices away from kids these days. It's just... And then I think that's affecting my brain, because part of me knows that it's probably bad. You know, you want to be a good parent, but I also don't want to play in the front yard every day to make sure that Teresa doesn't get kidnapped.
Yeah. Well, think about it this way. When we were coming up, the world was a cleaner place. So their fetal environment, the next generation's fetal environment, is dirtier than ours was. And the one after them is going to be dirtier still. Mm. So the brains are more dysregulated just based on that. I love to have kids come in the door when they're like 10, 11, 12. Struggles with school, struggles with mom and dad, struggles with behavior. Let me work on some of the hardware, have a counselor work on some of the hardware, the software, and then let the estrogen and the testosterone hit, and you're going to be better off.
Yeah.
It's a lovely time to brighten a brain if you can get them right before that happens.
How important is diet?
Oh, it's extremely important.
I mean, we're really coming through a time right now where nobody wants to really talk about, you know, really a big underlying problem that we really have with COVID and the whole pandemic is that, unfortunately, Americans are pretty unhealthy. Not all of us, not you, right? But we got a big chunk. And whether it's our brain or I guess it's all about the brain, right? It starts with the brain, and no brain, no game. And so how much does diet, because we've seen that poor diet has really created a lot of problems with this COVID, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll say it. I don't know if you want to admit it, but it is a big problem. And so how much of, like, you know, is if our diet is bad in our physical body, how is it affecting our brain?
Well, I see a lot of cases of anxiety where people skip meals. They get up in the morning, have a piece of toast, a cup of coffee, go to their first job, go to their second job. And by 5 or 6 o'clock, they're anxious and ready to panic.
Right.
Or moving towards their dysregulation. Some people have seizure activity. That's when they're going to have the seizure, when they're in the 5th, 6th, 7th hour of not fueling their brain. Brain hates that. You want a cranky brain. You said halt. You got to feed it. So I tell people, you don't have to sit down and have 3 squares a day, but nurture yourself enough to have some power bars with you or something. If you get into a situation where you need to skip a meal, you still need to take a minute and fuel your brain.
Yeah.
And we talk a lot at Brain Love about sympathetic versus parasympathetic. So let's most of us are, that's your autonomic nervous system. And sympathetic we think of as fight or flight. And parasympathetic we think of as rest and digest. So when you come to Brain Love and we can see that you're anxious, we can see you're going too fast and you're telling us, you know, life is too fast for me. We talk about, okay, how can you plug back into your parasympathetic nervous system? Well, if the mnemonic is rest and digest, do just that. When you have a meal, sit down and talk to your family for 20 to 30 minutes and digest your food. Let the blood be around your stomach. Let yourself be in that space. You worked hard to get to the point where you put the meal on the table. Sit and digest it before you pop up and do something, before you go do the dishes, before everybody goes in four different directions. Rest and digest is very important. And you can find that you can tap back into your calmness and your center if you can do that. So that being said, being hugely overweight, your heart is working so hard to pump the blood through, back up through to your brain and through all that extra tissue, you get sluggish. Your brain isn't getting what it needs. It's harder to move. It's harder to rush the blood around your brain using exercise. You know, you need oxygen. You need nutrition.
And lack of exercise only creates more lack of exercise because it doesn't become easy. You know, if you stop exercising, it doesn't become easier to exercise eventually. You know, we start to put on a little bit of weight and we start to get up in our head. And then the next thing you know, you said you were at the gym. I know my brain sometimes is my worst enemy. It's like, yeah, it's too cold out.
Yeah, and some of us,
your knees are going to start hurting.
Some of us are wired just to use our body to carry our brains around. We're having so much fun in our brain that we just really dislike exercise. I mean, that can be like a personality kind of a thing. So, and we can see that in the brain maps too. We can see if someone is more concerned about what's going on outside of them or more concerned about what's going on, you know, intrinsically.
Well, I know I loved exercise. I just hate to get to the point where I'm doing it. For some reason, like
once
I'm in it, I'm like, I love this. Oh my God, I'm so glad I'm doing this every day.
You know, but you can't just start at every day. Building good habits when it comes to exercise, very important to say, okay, I'm going to go to yoga on Tuesday and nothing's going to stop me from going to yoga on Tuesday. Do that for 2 months, start to feel the results and start feeling better and say, okay, I'm going to add a second workout in and nothing's going to stop me from having these 2 workouts a week. And before you know it, you're working out all the time. You're addicted to exercise. And, you know, that's how I build good habits. And when I'm, you know, an object in motion stays in motion. Once you get rolling like that, it's pretty good. But if you try and like starting Monday, I'm going to work out every day of the world, you're not going
to
make it.
Well, and don't you have to, if I want to start something, I have to kind of almost reprogram how I think about certain things. Like if I'm going to, you know, I can do something and in the past or a past habit might be, you know, maybe I might go have a list through a list of things that I hated about that. Like, oh, okay, it's done. But I definitely hated getting up and I definitely hated getting here. And so sometimes when I want to start doing something new or incorporate something new into my life, I have to start creating new ways of looking at it. Like, okay, I feel really good now that I did that. You know, because for some reason, and I know for me, sometimes I like to get into the negative. I love to list all the crummy things and not focus on all the positive things. And I feel like these are just habits that I have created. So something new, I have to start thinking of it as a new thing and create new habits on how I break it. Like at the end, you know, when we sit and rest and digest, you know, maybe... Because that would be a new habit, honestly. I don't know if we do that now, but you know, but maybe going through a list of things that I really appreciated about the new thing that I'm doing instead of a list of kind of the negative stuff about it.
Well, I think having realistic ideas about how long it takes to start getting all of the pluses out of something. And, you know, for me, if I'm going to try a new workout thing, I know I got to commit to 2 months because I'm not going to know until I do 2 months of that thing, how it's going to feel in my body and how I'm going to feel about it. You know, so.
Well, one of the great things I like to do is if I'm going to start running, I try to get involved with other people when I do it. You know, if I'm going to do a new class, I like to go in and I like to introduce myself to other people in the class. How you doing? My name is Tom. Shake hands. And then all of a sudden, it isn't just me. Now I feel like I'm kind of connected a little bit more to the group. You know, there was a time in my life I might show up at something and just be that guy in the back. And, you know, I'm here to do this. And then I do it. And then I'm out the door. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I start introducing myself, start becoming a little bit more accountable to a group or to a friend. You know, I like to run. I have a couple guys. I've made a commitment to run on certain days. And that way it takes me out of the picture a little bit more.
Yeah. I think all of us learn where our comfort zone is with sort of our extroversion versus our introversion. And finding loving ways to challenge yourself through that, I think, by not putting yourself into situations that are completely terrifying, but pushing the envelope a little bit on the direction you want to go in.
Well, and I think you start feeling like, hey, man, this is like, I'm doing this, and it feels different this time, you know, and I think that feels good. And, you know, as we get older, I'm 53 now, my life has changed so much, but not really changed, right? Just, you know, I get up, I do the same things pretty much, I work, da-da-da, but, you know, over the years, as maturity kind of comes along, you start to be like, hey, what do I have to lose, right? You know, why can't I reach out and introduce myself to people at a new class or a new group and start to become part of something where for so long I didn't,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I guess it's just maturity, you know? Time, right? So why would someone like want to reach out to you? What would be some things maybe someone might be going through? I think we're all stressed out, right?
Well, one of the things we're best at is anxiety.
Oh.
So, and it's easier to slow down a fast brain than it is to speed up a slow brain. I have some wonderful protocols for depression. Oh. So, and you know, I can't cure anything, but I can push your brain towards regulation. So, and I've been able to successfully treat headaches. I have tinnitus is a really tough thing. And that pink noise that's coming is supposed to be a treatment for tinnitus. I don't know how successful it is until I get it here. And I think it's kind of hit and miss. If someone has a lot of inflammation on one side of their head and not the other, when we start to regulate and balance that, I think I can decrease the tinnitus. I can't make it go away.
What is tinnitus?
Is a ringing in the ears.
Oh, shoot.
That's yeah, not and it's always there, and it's really disturbing, and it can become very, you know, a very big impairment. We're pretty good with Parkinson's, not so great with Alzheimer's. I can sort of slow it down a little bit, but I need to have all the caregivers on board with what's going on. It's a bit of an uphill battle, but again, we're developing new things all the time. So it really doesn't matter what you come in the door with. We're going to go through the same process. We're going to take the map. We're going to see where the dysregulation is with speed. And I put the boxes on the head on the Velcro cap to regulate speed. But I also work on connection. So I actually use current on the brain. So it's the same technology as electroshock therapy, except for electroshock therapy is 70 amperes worth of power. This is 0.5 milliamperes.
Okay.
So we put two electrodes on the scalp, right where we can see there are two areas of the brain that are not talking to each other. And we run this little baby microcurrent. We say, hey, you two, talk to each other. And we start connecting the dots and get the brain connected again. Because we don't even realize when the brain becomes disconnected. It happens slowly over time, or it can happen with events. I have a colleague who obsesses about his brain. He's always brain mapping himself. And he lost both his parents in the space of 2 weeks. Mm. And the first thing he did when he got back to his office was brain map himself. And what he discovered was he had disconnected the rational part of his brain up in his frontal lobe with the amygdala, where the big emotion is, because it was such a hot potato, he couldn't deal with it. So he just disconnected it. Well, how many years is he going to walk around like that? And that's important to have those two areas connected, because that's where people get into PTSD, when the rational part of the brain can't walk back a big emotion. You can't get away from something that, say, maybe happened 10 years ago. Your body is still going through it as if it's still happening. And you can't walk it back because these two areas are not connected. If you could do some trauma work with a therapist and do neurotherapy at the same time, you can connect those two parts of the brain and make more progress in therapy and get away from that post-traumatic stress. In fact, when people come in and they're diagnosed with post-traumatic stress, I'm very careful about that. I don't want to take the case unless they do have mental health support.
Right. Yeah. So like counseling or something like that.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That's tough. That's post-traumatic stress disorder is a tough one, because it is, you know, it's so personal. And, you know, to one person, you might be like, I don't get it. But to the person, it's big time. Mm-hmm. And who am I, or who are we, to tell somebody they don't have it, right? And I think that's where, you know, it's tough, man. The brain is, and living through the past moments in our life can be really a challenge. I, you know, when my mom passed away, for some reason, I was okay with it. Like, you know, people are like, oh, so sorry about your mom. And I'm like, hey, you know, my mom, the lady that passed away was not the person that raised me, right? She had gotten this thing, and she was, you know, she was suffering. And I had to really, you know, step back and be just, instead of like what I'm losing, I had to really focus on what I had gotten, which was really a great mom for 50 something years, and to let her go and to celebrate it, you know. But then you'll see someone whose mom passes away, and it's just, it just continues to be
thing. Processing grief is very difficult for some people. Yeah.
And it's, and who am I to say, hey, so, you know, stop boo-hooing about your mom passing, you know, and when it didn't, my experience was different. So, that's where we have to.
Well, let me tell you, pregnancy from a neurofeedback perspective, a baby is a parasite.
It is a parasite.
So
good point.
If you have a woman who's having multiple pregnancies, especially if they're not spaced out very far, her brain isn't fully recovering because a woman's body will feed the baby before it feeds her own brain.
That's right.
So women get taxed by multiple pregnancies. And, you know, if you have those Irish twins, you really should come in, look under the hood, see what's going on, learn ways to boost your brain and recover. And especially like if you're going to have multiple children, come in and recover between them.
So, I don't want to know what you would do for each individual person, but what are some things or some suggestions that you give, to people that are maybe struggling in certain departments? Can it just be diet? Can it be a medication? You know, I bought this new Fairlife milk. You know, for some reason I have a knit challenge with milk, and this new, I think it's Fairlife, but there's one that's just, you know, I think it's just lactose free, but then there's another one that has stuff. And it says brain stuff on it. I'm like, oh, maybe I need that for my brain.
So, oh, there's a million things on the market.
Right. There's a million things for the brain.
We just talk about a few basic building blocks at Brain Love. But we also, if we see cytokine reactions, if we see that right and left brain equally inflamed, we're going to start ruling out things like allergens, like food allergens, mm-hmm. Environmental toxicity, the whole thing. Because you can be reacting to something you're ingesting or something you're breathing or so forth and so on. Everlywell online is something we talk about a lot. If you...
Everlywell?
Everlywell.com. You go on there and they send you a kit in the mail and you poke your finger and put 5 little drops of blood on there and you send it in and it's your IgG immune reactions.
Oh.
And it's what you're reacting to in your diet. I popped up, there's 4 levels. I didn't have any high 4s. I had, my 3 threes were egg whites, cow's milk, and yogurt.
Everly, say that again?
Everlywell.com.
Everly.
And if you hunt around a little, you can find a 20% off coupon.
.com. Everlywell.
Yeah.
Everlywell.
And you can figure out, and food sensitivities are really hard to figure out because you don't get the problem until 3 days after you eat the food, so you never connect the dots.
Right.
So now when I eat eggs, I know I have a finger joint that gets really inflamed if I eat eggs. 3 days later, I never would have figured it out on my own.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is not 3 days later. It could be anything after that.
Yeah.
Well, I had, there was a family member that had celiac, and I meet people all the time that are gluten-free, right? But an actual person, I don't know if they identify as a celiac or they have celiac, but he couldn't have any wheat. I mean, if he even had a molecule, a small little piece of wheat, mm-hmm. I mean, it wrecked him.
Yep.
And he carried a card. But then you have people that are like, I'm gluten-free and I have celiac, but eat some things that have wheat in them.
Yeah, right?
I mean, the dust on Wrigley Spearmint gum is a wheat-based dust.
Who knew?
Yeah, and he's like, I can't chew chewing gum with that powder on it because it's made of flour or some sort of wheat. So
Wow. It
is interesting when, you know, people say don't eat a lot of nightshade. It's it creates inflammation
and
in the joints.
And ashwagandha is a nightshade.
What is it?
Ashwagandha is a nightshade.
There you go.
Yeah, who knew? So people go on it short term and it helps reduce their anxiety, but if they stay on it too long, it can start to create neuroinflammation.
Well, one of the things that unfortunately with this tooth I went through was I ate a lot of Advil and naproxen, or what is it?
Aleve.
Aleve, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, it was bad. And I'm really suffering from it now. My stomach is struggling. I'm not digesting really very well. My stomach feels distended, and it's all from that month of a bunch of medication. I'm not on any medication. I don't take a lot of Aleve or Advil. So to spend a month or so eating it a lot my body feels terrible right now.
Yeah, it's your condition versus your constitution. Some people can take that stuff like candy, no problem, and some of us really have trouble, especially, like you say, when we take a lot of it.
Well, and I think we get used to it. Mm-hmm. You know, this toothache didn't happen overnight. You know, it was okay, and then I got, you know, if I knew that it was going to end up being there, I would have done something a lot earlier. But, you know, and mm-hmm. it's just like when we take medication or, you know, drink milk. Milk really wrecks a lot of people. I think we just become used to it. And we're like, yeah, this is just how I feel until you cut it out. And then you're like, wow, I feel so much better. Just like this tooth that took that root right out, and I'm 100%.
Well, the way that I view things is so different. Like, I can see in the maps if someone has what's called a calcium channelopathy, right? So the nerves are having a hard time firing. They're having a harder time burning dopamine. They're having a harder time staying down in first gear. And what we know about people who can't burn dopamine, they seek out adrenaline. These are the thrill seekers.
Okay.
And when you're a little kid, how do you seek adrenaline? You poke the bear. Who's the authority figure in the room? You piss them off. They get mad at you. You get the hit of adrenaline that you're looking for. Unfortunately, if you carry that behavior in adulthood, there's a lot of really weird ways to get a thrill, right? I mean, they're everything from roller coasters to drugs, right?
Right.
So people are naturally attracted to that. So if you come in my clinic and I see you have a calcium channelopathy, I can go, okay, I'm going to support that by nurturing your basal ganglia to remember that it oscillates between 1 and 4 hertz. So I'm going to nurture that. And then I want you to go and research magnesium and vitamin D, because we know that that supports calcium channels and gets them firing better. And in the extremes, this stuff is related to autism. This stuff is related to schizophrenia. It's related to bipolar depression. Mm. It can all start with this genetic calcium channelopathy.
Wow.
So you break these things down, and people are, you know, struggling with that at varying levels.
It is interesting how food plays in with the brain. Mm-hmm. I had a client whose son had autism, and if fed certain things, his behavior really changed due to the food. I think he had like a corn allergy. I mean, it was crazy. And I mean, it, like, to a point where feed him this kind of food and we can't keep him home. Take him off this kind of food, and his behavior changes enough where we could keep him at home.
It's insane inflammation. When your brain's on fire, how are you supposed to behave?
Right. And you can learn that. You can figure that out through a visit with you.
A visit.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
If you come to
my office, let me get a brain map on someone. I can tell you how much inflammation we're seeing, and then we start working it. Let's rule this out, rule that out. We start work. What can we do to get rid of this inflammation? And I actually have a protocol called inflammation reduction that I use quite frequently. And it's either on the left side or the right side of the head, because I'm always trying to balance out the brain, get the thalamus getting the same information from both sides. And brain injury and concussion, it's like it weakens the blood-brain barrier on one side and we get more neuroinflammation on that side. Mm. So I also am a vendor for the state Traumatic Brain Injury Fund, the TBI fund. And if you jump through their hoops and fill out their forms and you have a doctor say, yes, this person lives in Delaware and has a brain injury, they'll actually pay for a round of therapy at my office.
That's interesting, because my niece, Lily, mm-hmm. was in a car hit by a motorcycle. Mm. Probably, I think my youngest had just been born, so 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, no, excuse me, 10 years ago, sorry. But they were hit by a motorcycle. She had major traumatic brain injury. She was up at AI DuPont. Mm-hmm. She survived, but, you know, lots of therapy. And she's, you know, maybe that would be interesting for something. Maybe she could want to come and check that out.
Yeah. So a physical injury to the brain like that, a really big traumatic brain injury, we can still work for regulation and try and get functional changes. I did have a young man who had a pretty big brain injury, and we got changes for him. We got him driving again.
Wow.
I mean, that's functional.
Well, I know Lily would love to drive.
Yeah. And if she's teetering on the ability to drive, we might be able to get her there.
She's come AI DuPont did such an amazing job with her. I mean, just a real gift. Well, I'll send her mom your card.
Great.
Because that'd be really cool. So how'd you get involved? How are you involved with my dad? in the VA because I get a text from my father. And you're hanging out with those guys.
Well, I was sitting next to him at the luncheon, at the VVA luncheon. My husband is vice president of the VVA.
Aww.
So my husband was in Vietnam. And indeed, I went to Vietnam 2 years ago with my husband and two other couples, both men he was stationed there with. And we went to Saigon. We went to Nha Trang. And we went up to Pleiku, where these guys were all living together during the war.
Well, I love my dad. And he, I love that he's involved with those guys and trying to... to help.
Yeah, your dad's very personable.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. He's the colonel. He's
the colonel.
The colonel. He's a funny guy. And, you know, he just went through some... I mean, not only did we go through COVID and going through COVID, but my mom passed. And that was his only wife. And they were together over 50 years. And so, you know, it's been a tough time for him. And it's, you know, my life hasn't always been great. I haven't always been grateful and appreciated my brain. You know, there was an early time in my life where I did a lot of partying and carrying on and finally found my way back in 97. And, you know, one of the biggest gifts that I have today is that I'm able to be there for my dad, you know, and it's a gift. I love the fact that I can give him back because I took for so long. Mm-hmm. And so to give back and to be there for him after the passing of my mom. You know, it's just been a crazy last couple of years, the passing of her and the COVID and all this other stuff. So I'm surprised we're all still hanging in there.
So I was doing pediatric physical therapy most recently at Easter Seals in Georgetown. I worked for them for 8 years. And then a friend of mine had a mild stroke. And she was driving to New York to get neurotherapy. And they actually had her back at work within 2 weeks.
Wow.
And so she bought a very simple two-channel neurotherapy system and brought it back here and taught me how to set her up. Because it's kind of hard to do on your own head. So I was working on her and she was working on me. And then we started taking some clients. And then I met my system, which is called NeuroField. And it works on the body as well as the brain. So my physical therapy background, I love that. So I can put inflammation reduction coils on an inflamed knee. I can work on a shoulder.
Okay.
I can work with skin pressure ulcers. There's a lot of things that you can do with frequency medicine that's just really, really cool.
Wow.
So I lost my heart to the system. I saved up some money. I went out to California to their boot camp because they won't sell it to you unless you do their training. So I did the training and I brought this state-of-the-art system back. And that guy out there in California is constantly innovating. It's very hard to keep up with him. And now he's all about this pink noise. So now I'm all about this pink noise. I went to a conference finally the first week in December this year. It got canceled last year because of COVID. Mm. So that's the direction my clinic is going. And like I said, I have two stacks. So I have a clinic going in Dover and a clinic going in Rehoboth. So I can't just buy one unit. I have to buy two units now to keep everything going. So it's interesting.
Well, listen, I appreciate you coming on. I, sorry, I'm not more educated in the brain, but you've taught me a lot and I really appreciate that. And the idea, you know, the reason for this podcast is just to try to introduce people to a bigger audience. And I think we did that today. I think you're awesome. I love this stuff. I wish I knew more about it. It's such a complicated kind of thing. So
it is. And I have to educate the public. So this is a wonderful opportunity for me to say, hey, you guys, Brain Love is here. It's a wonderful resource here in our community.
Well, you can come back anytime because I could sit here and listen as long as you don't mind my dumb questions.
No, you have good questions.
We'll work through it. But listen, I love this stuff. And I think it's very important. We do not understand... You know, how big of a... I mean, we know we need a brain. I just don't know if we realize what a bigger role it plays in our life when it even comes to diet and just how we our rational thinking and just all that. It's and then balancing, you know, humility and self.
Yeah.
It's an interesting combination.
Yeah.
And God, right? Right. And I'm not religious. Well, listen, I appreciate it. So, let me look at this real quick. So Lauren Haggerty, and so you've got the Brain Love Neurotherapy, and it's at www.brainloveneurotherapy.com.
Right.
And people can go on there. I went on there and checked it out. You do offer, I think, a test that people can take?
So, yeah. So I offer a free initial consult.
Okay.
If you want to just come learn more about it at my office, I'll take you through Brain Map 101. If you decide you want to do the brain map, I need clean, dry hair with no product. Make sure you eat something with protein and make sure you're hydrated. take all your drugs as prescribed. Sometimes if there's an ADD med, we need to back off that for about 24 to 48 hours before, if okay. it's not going to cause too much behavior, particularly in a child. So we can see the brain without that. But otherwise, you take all your meds as prescribed, no caffeine for 2 hours, and then we pop the hood and see what's going on in your brain.
So no stimulants.
Well, for two, yeah. Stimulants can sort of hide depression. Stimulants can hide things from me. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, listen, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And will you come back?
I'd love to come back.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
I love having you back. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.